Welcome, everybody. Thank you for those that have come on time. It's very much appreciated by the chair. Today we have, I think, a very important hearing. This is really our Transportation Road, Bridge, and Transit Finance 101 from our nonpartisan staff. So we're going to take, this is the only agenda item. We're going to take their handouts and PowerPoint, one slide at a time. And at times I'll move the hearing along if we need to. But what we want to do here, unlike some of our other hearings members, is that feel free at any point to pause and ask a question. We're not gonna hurry to get a particular group in and out of here. They're our staff. They're available to us now as well as most any time we need them. So for that reason, members, please feel free to ask for recognition, and you can get your question taken care of. So wanted to have each of our wonderful staff members introduce themselves again to the committee. And
on the financing for highways, most of the funding is not through the general fund, and so appropriations that are made in a typical transportation budget out of the general fund are a fairly small proportion of the overall transportation funding. There are some appropriations for transit, and the Department of Public Safety is the major areas where there are some general fund dollars used in transportation. And at a general level, local roads are funded through a combination at the federal level, some state funds, as well as local effort through primarily property tax. There are three basic sources, and these are the core sources for highway funding, and we'll walk through each of these three: motor fuels tax, registration tax, and the motor vehicle sales tax. We'll start with the motor fuels tax. This is a tax at a per gallon rate that's on all types of motor fuels. It is currently set at 28.5 cents per gallon, and that is a combination of two parts. And one is a just basic 25 cent rate. There's a second piece that's referred to as the debt service surcharge. This is now at 3.5 cents. That is a variable rate based on paying debt service on some trunk highway bonds. We'll circle back around to that component a little bit later. There are other types of fuel, and they are taxed at proportional rates based on the energy content of those fuel types. So E85, I'm not sure that methanol is used, but M85 is another example. For the most part, these revenues are dedicated solely to highway systems. There is a portion that's attributed to non-highway use, such as fuel used in snowmobiles, watercraft, all-terrain vehicles. Those are transferred to certain Department of National Resources accounts for purposes related to those types of activities. So snowmobile trails, ATV trails, and so forth. In 2008, there was a rather substantial legislative package enacted, and one of the components was a phase-in of the gas tax. The chart on this slide just shows the phase-in as it came in over the years. As I said, currently the rate is at 28.5 cents per gallon, and that is set under current law in fiscal 13 and all subsequent fiscal years after that. The second, yes, Mr. Chair.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Bruce. Just on this, before you leave the motor fuels tax, we hear oftentimes, or sometimes we hear about the need to potentially index this tax to inflation. What would actually that mean? What would be the effective result of that? How would one calculate the increment and increase if we were to index the gas tax?
Mr. Chair and members, there are multiple ways that that indexing could be structured. One approach that I think has been discussed out in the literature, at least, is tying motor fuels tax to one of the consumer products index, or there's another index for governmental purchases, and that one might be, you know, there are some arguments that that might be a better fit. And that type of indexing would tie the rate to the cost increases in purchasing. It wouldn't just be fuel. I'm not aware of an index that would be specific to fuel, but there are indexes to kind of the general cost of purchases. And so the rate would continue. It would be raised up based on how the index changed on, say, an annual basis. And there are a number of ways that that could be structured. It has been done in a couple of other states.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, the next of the three core revenue sources is the registration tax, also known as cab fees. This is an annual tax. It's imposed in conjunction with registering motor vehicles to be used on public roads. And it's based on the core, or the original list price of the motor vehicle. It's a percentage of the original list price, but that is depreciated down. So there's a schedule such that as the vehicle gets older, in each year, the amount of the tax reduces. You can kind of see the basic formula here on the slide. There's a difference in the taxation schedules and rates for different types of motor vehicles. And all of the funds go towards streets and highways. We'll get into that revenue allocation side a little bit later. The third core tax is the motor vehicle sales tax. This is a sales tax on, sales of new and used motor vehicles. It's at a 6.5% rate, and this is imposed instead of the general sales tax. There was a constitutional amendment. Again, we're seeing the constitutional influence in transportation. This amendment was passed by the voters in 2006 and dedicated all of the motor vehicle sales tax revenue to transportation purposes. There was a phase-in period and some limitations placed into the constitutional language so that there is a ceiling on the amount from the motor vehicle sales tax, or MVES, that can go towards highways, and a minimum amount that can go towards transit. So the Constitution set a phase-in, and it set these basic ceiling and floor limitations. The actual allocation of where the funds go within that is set by statute. That was set in 2007 with a couple of budget-related modifications. And starting in fiscal year 2012 and all subsequent fiscal years, you can see the allocation now goes 60% to highways and 40% to transit, or 36% to the metropolitan area and 4% to Greater Minnesota Transit Services. There are some other revenue sources that are comparatively more minor. Actually, federal aid is not minor, and we'll touch on that with a future slide. Here is a list of some of the other sources. For the trunk highway system, there are some amounts that come from MnDOT's agency operations, permitting, penalties imposed, sale of goods, and so forth.
Okay. Mr. Burris, Representative O'Neill has a question.
Thank you, Chairman. In relation to the governor's budget proposal of bringing our sales tax down to 5.5%, do you know, does that also transfer over to the vehicle sales? Did he account for that, do you know, in his budget?
I have been looking for that, and I did not see specifics on that point. I think it was left open. So I'm sorry, I don't know right now. I'll double check and get back to you.
Yeah, if we could get that, that would be wonderful, because that's a pretty substantial difference. Thank you.
Thanks for the question. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, to round out the other revenue sources, I'll just touch briefly on the leased vehicle sales tax. This is a sales tax on leasing motor vehicles as opposed to their sale. And a portion of those revenues goes into the general fund. A portion goes towards transit. I'll touch on that a little bit later. And a portion also goes towards roads in the part of the Twin Cities metropolitan area. This is a summary of the amounts to try and give you a little bit of a sense of the relative portions of revenue. This slide provides federal as well as state revenue sources. And the next slide provides a distribution just of state sources. So from this, you can see that motor fuels taxes and the registration tax and are very substantial portions. Motor vehicle sales tax, a portion is going into highways. Again, this is just highway funding. That's a smaller share, but these are the three core funding sources. Another revenue source, I guess you could put it, is bonding. And it's a bit more of a complex area because conceptually you could think of it as a revenue source. It provides funds that can be used for the transportation system, but it's debt financing. And so it also incurs a debt in as far as repaying those bonds in future years. The bonds are authorized through legislation, so there's authority given through the legislative process, and those proceeds from sale of bonds are then provided to transportation projects.
And Representative O'Neill, again.
Thank you, Chairman. Just back to the revenue sources, can you speak to as far as the trend for the motor fuel percentage at 46.6%? Is that increase or decrease, say, over the last span of 10 years, percentage-wise?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I can guess, and my guess is that it has decreased as a relative share, and that's largely because of the motor vehicle sales tax constitutional amendment and the phase into transportation purposes. And so the motor vehicle sales tax has been allocated over decades to transportation, some of the time in some amounts, and to the general fund some of the time in some amounts. And there have been a number of changes over the years, with the allocation under the Constitution going exclusively to transportation. That's up to the share that MVEST has been as a proportion of the overall funding from these core sources.
Thank you.
But I can get you more detailed information on how much the motor fuels tax has brought in and what its share has been. If you'd like to see something like this that's more historical.
Thank you. Yes. But I guess the bigger question is, as we have more fuel efficiency and things like that, has that been eroding away that revenue source? I guess that is the bigger question.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, that has been a concern expressed in recent years, and it is I think it's fair to say that it's a likely trend in the future. I guess am not convinced myself that trend has shown up quite yet.
Okay.
That might be a little bit too much of my own opinion without really studying it further, but from what I've looked at it in the past, I think that is more of a future concern. Again, I can get specific historical numbers put together for you if you'd like on what the motor fuels tax collection amounts have been.
Thank you.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Brisson. Thank you, Representative O'Neill, because I think you're raising an important point. And so just, two quick comments on that. There are significant vehicle efficiency new standards that will be going into effect as a result of an agreement between the Obama administration and the car companies in Detroit. And so that will be an important trend. And then Representative Beard and I served on a MnDOT task force on to study the mileage-based user fee, and there is a report out about that. I don't anticipate that we'll be moving on those recommendations this year, but we may have some time for a hearing later this year on that report and have the committee have a chance to react to it. It was not without controversy, and there's even, I think, a minority report. But nonetheless, we spent a lot of time. I think it was at least half a dozen meetings or so, and we really took a look at that as an alternative down the line, down the road, future source of revenue. It's something that, you know, I take seriously. We've had some titans of transportation finance in Minnesota have advocated this for a long time, and I'm talking about the former chair of this committee, Bernie Leader, and James Oberstar also, who served as the transportation finance chair in Congress for many years. So, but again, there's information out about that. We'll get that report to people if they're interested, and if we have time, we'll hear, you know, the recommendations directly from MnDOT and others that served on the task force. So thank you for the question. It's a really critical one and one that we've spent some time on.
And Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Earhart.
That's another reason why we should be raising the gas tax.
I like the ha-ha. Well, and again, that's an issue that, again, we'll be discussing, I believe, in this committee as we get closer to writing the ultimate transportation finance bill. And I know there's some ideas out there for that. Okay, any other questions at this point? Okay, thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Chair. On that subject, the Texas Transportation Institute, which does a lot of good research that I think has been helpful, has done research on that. I had occasion to hear their report at a CSG meeting. And for a whole range of reasons, they say across the spectrum, the opposition to that is significant, and they sort of trace that in the research. And they do conclude that for the foreseeable future, the gas tax will still be the primary source of revenue, that the other just continues to have obstacles.
Thank you. And it would be interesting to see that report, and it may sounds like their conclusions would probably be consistent with some of the perspectives that we heard on the task force. So that's good to know. Thank you. Hey. Mr. Burris.
And then, Mr. Chair and members, back on transportation bonding, there's an important distinction in coming, I guess, out of the Constitution and in interpretations of it between trunk highway bonds and other forms of general obligation bonds. Trunk highway bonds are constitutionally distinct and are available only for transportation purposes. Other forms of general obligation bonds, GO bonds, are not allowed to be used for trunk highways. And so I think conceptually how I would express it is there's a firewall in between the two types of bonds. Trunk highway bonds have been used and authorized over recent years, and the types of uses have been for the basic state road construction, as well as for a couple of new programs and initiatives, and has also been traditionally a funding source for some of MnDOT's facilities. MnDOT as an agency has quite a few buildings throughout the state for district headquarters, for truck stations and housing facilities and equipment, and bonding has gone towards supporting those facilities. GO bonds have also been historically provided, or revenues have been provided for transportation purposes. And there's been a mixture in past years between funding general programs and particular projects. Some of the programs for which the greatest proportion of transportation bonding has gone include ones for local roads, local bridges, and transit facilities. And then some of the larger specific projects include light rail transit, other rail, and airports. These are just examples, by the way. It's not a comprehensive list. Typically, general obligation bonds are authorized in the capital investment bill. Trunk highway bonds have been authorized in those same bills and also in transportation finance legislation, historically at least. This chart is basically a summary of some of the things that have been touched on so far to give you a sense of the kind of flow of funds. And it really brings us into the next section of discussion of transportation finance. You see the core taxes going into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, and federal funds and some of the local other sources for MnDOT going into the Trunk Highway Fund. So what is the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund? Well, it's a constitutionally established fund that is essentially a holding category, and it's the distribution point for dedicated transportation revenues to go towards state and local highways. So the three core funding sources, or at least a portion of them, go into this fund and then get distributed out. There are a couple of other constitutionally established highway funds to touch on as well. One is the Trunk Highway Fund, and that provides funding for the state's trunk highway system. And then there are two funds for state aid. Aid for the counties for their county state aid highway system, and aid to municipalities for municipal city streets. The basic allocation in aid to the municipalities through the county state aid highway fund, municipal state aid street fund, is by a combination, again, of some constitutional requirements and then distributions following some statutory formulas. For the most part, these formulas are based on the proportional weightings of each county or each city, proportional weighting that each has to the whole, to the totality. For the most part, this is administered by the Minnesota Department of Transportation, following formulas. There are some set-asides, but it's primarily funding that goes out as direct aid to cities and counties. Mm. So on the CASA fund, County State Aid Highway Fund, there are actually two formulas for allocating the funds. One is called known as the excess sum, and this consists of quote-unquote new revenue. It's additional revenue that was made available to transportation purposes as a result of two things. One was the dedication of motor vehicle sales tax to transportation. So the additional funds that came in or comes into the County State Aid Highway Fund as a result of that constitutional phase-in and dedication is distributed under this excess sum formula. And then there were a couple of 2008 legislative changes that resulted in increased revenues for transportation purposes, and those funds more or less are also allocated under this formula. The other formula allocates what is known as the apportionment sum, and you can see the components of that formula. These are all proportional except for the equal, which is just an equal share. Actually, I guess that's proportional too. It's just an equal amount. There's a similar formula for a municipal state aid street allocation, funds going to cities. There is a constitutional restriction on the population of cities. They have to have a population of at least 5,000.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Burris, I'm thinking about the new folks on the committee here, and I just want to be sure we're clear when we understand how the Trunk Highway Fund relates to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. On page 8, can we just step back there for just a second? The Highway User Tax Distribution Fund shows about $1.76 billion a year. The net money is allocated out, of course, to the for road purposes. But over here you got the Trunk Highway Fund, and you're showing two pots of money that flow into it, federal money of about $393 million, and other sources of about $51 million, but you're showing $1.46 billion. Can you just clarify that for us on how that flows and what that means? So,
yes, Mr. Chair and members, in your packet there are a couple of sheets that show the full flow. This is a chunked-off portion that might potentially create more confusion than illumination. And so the highway tax, highway user tax distribution fund has flows going into the trunk highway fund as well as into the county state aid highway fund and municipal state aid street funds.
Thank you.
And so you don't see that in this particular chart. Slide. And so I could see where that's worth highlighting. There is a slide later that shows the kind of allocation side of things, and then there are two sheets in your save folder that show kind of the whole chart together. One is a visual one that's being held up right now that gives you a little bit of sense of the relative size of the amounts, and a similar chart is in a two-page write-up on highway financing.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and thank you, Mr. Burris. I could see a little puzzlement on some faces, and just wanted to be sure we had a chance just to clarify that a little bit. Appreciate it.
And thank you for catching that, Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, thank you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that'll be an ongoing, you know, concern and question, but it's helpful to get that on the table.
That does bring us into the distribution side of the discussions. There are three core highway funds that we've discussed, and the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund is the starting point for allocating them out. Again, it's a constitutional framework that drives this, and that framework includes a split of 95% and 5% of funds in the HUTD, Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. The 95% distribution goes into the three funds that we had touched on. And here are the percentages. And so when you hear 62.29.9, this is what's being referenced. It's 62% of a 95% distribution from the HUTD, to put it briefly. 29% and 9%.
If there's one thing, members, that you want to take back from this hearing, well, there's many, I hope, but you can only retain so much. Just go home saying 62-29-9. That's really half the battle right there.
Are you supposed to say hut after that?
Good. Well, if that helps you remember it, sure.
Yes. Yes,
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, I'm all about technical accuracy, so I always add in of the 95%.
Okay. well said.
And then, Mr. Chair and members, the 5% set aside is the other component of the distribution coming out of the HUTD. That set aside is allowed under the Constitution to go into any of the three core constitutionally established funds. So the legislature, through enacted laws and statutes, can set the mix between the trunk highway fund, county state aid, municipal state aid. That's a formula that cannot change on an annual basis. There's, again, a constitutional restriction on the frequency of changing the formula. Currently, funds go into the county state aid highway fund, but actually into accounts within that fund for town roads, town bridges, and then a flexible account that's administered by MnDOT following some legislative priorities. That's the flexible highway account. Those funds go towards a combination of things. A component of it is counties in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. The majority of the funds go towards turnbacks. These are agreements that are made between MnDOT and local units of government to convert roads out of the trunk highway system and onto the municipal systems. So converting a trunk highway to a county state aid highway or a municipal state aid street. And that is largely an advantage. I think it's perceived as an advantage on both sides. The funds here are made available to fix up the street, bring the roadways up to current standards, and then so the local units of government get the advantage of a built up, refreshed roadway, but then they take on the maintenance efforts on that road and the jurisdiction of that road going forward.
Okay, we have a couple questions, Mr. Burris. First, Representative Hausman, and then Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope I understand the problem well enough to even ask this question about it. I was looking at the connection between slide 22 and 26 for that city that's less than 5,000, which coincidentally one of mine is, and I just spoke to their city council last night and they asked about this. So their turnback agreements aren't between MnDOT and that and the city less than 5,000. Is it between the city and the county? And the county would have to, if there were a city less than 5,000, would they have to negotiate with their county if they had a road that, if they were seeking a turnback? Because it, when it's highway, I mean, the slide 22 says that municipal state aid streets, the system is essentially constitutionally restricted to cities having a population of at least 5,000. So if they have a street that they were seeking a turnback on, they wouldn't go directly to MnDOT, they go to the county?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, that's in all likelihood the case. You're correct that the turnback could not go to the municipality. It could not become a city street on the municipal state aid system because of the population cutoff for the city. It sounds like the most likely scenario would be bringing it into the county state aid system. But I would probably need to see more detail and would want to talk to MnDOT to get any farther into that.
Okay. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. Actually, I see the next slide actually answers my question, so I'll just wait. Okay.
But actually, somebody, I'm interested in what the question was, so we all.
I just wanted to know the 5% setback for flexible highway accounts and how much that equated to, and on the next slide it actually gives us the dollar figure for the biennium. I guess it's for the 2012. $46.3 million, it looks like.
Okay, and then Representative Howe.
Chair, the only question I have is on slide 25 when it says town bridge and town road. The definition of town. I mean, is that different than a municipality? Are we dealing with towns less than 5,000? Where does, or is it, we talking townships? I guess that's the question I have. Who has access?
Mr. Chair, Representative Howe. There is not a population cutoff for towns. This is townships. Municipality in general, I think it's safe to say in the statutes, is usually a broader term that is encompasses, for the most part, cities as well as towns. It's a little bit more of a local unit of government. Here, the funding here is for townships.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, the overall distribution flow is shown on this page. I would note that this is preliminary and some of the numbers have shifted with the consolidated fund statement having just come out. And so I would like to emphasize that that these are now a little bit more approximate than the exactness of the numbers might indicate on this slide. But it should give you hopefully a sense of the basic flow and the relative overall amounts.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Burris, thank you for this slide. It helps understand how things flow. But I thank you, too, for noting in the upper left-hand box, federal aid, $194 million went directly to local governments and bypassed MnDOT, apparently, correct? Is that how we're reading this? And is not included in the federal money that came through the Trunk Highway Fund.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, yes, the federal aid amount, a portion of federal aid goes to the Trunk Highway Fund for the state system, and then a portion goes to the locals. This slide does not include boxes of mm-hmm. sending it to the locals, largely because there are a lot of boxes on the overall slide already. I'd have to check with MnDOT on quite how the funding flows through. I believe MnDOT is the recipient of the funds. I'm not sure to what extent it's just passed through or MnDOT is involved with allocation.
And Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, perhaps it's a policy question we may want to chat about one of these days about money coming from Washington going around this committee to other places around the state. Not necessarily a bad thing, but it might be good for us to know why we do that and why the Finance Committee right. doesn't have any jurisdiction over it.
And thank you for that. It's a question I've thought about. And members, we're going to have probably within the next month. We haven't set a final date, but we're going to have someone from MnDOT come in who's an expert on all of these federal funds because this is such a key part of transportation finance in the state that we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the MAP 21 program, which is the current federal it's going to sunset. Probably by the time we get to it, it'll have sunsetted already, but it's the current federal highway and transit funding source for the state. So, we'll definitely have a good discussion about that, and I'm very interested in some of your ideas around this. Representative Metz, I believe, had a question. Don't know if
I can either wait or we can go back to it after the end.
Unlike our other hearings, I really want the members to sort of chime in when they have so they don't, you don't forget what you're going to say later. So go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is going back to slide 22, and I thought it might have been answered with Representative Hausman's question, but I still had, I guess, are we reaching out to our communities that are under 5,000 residents, and do they have other sources for funding? And if so, are we making sure that they know what those sources are and keeping them up to speed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Metza, there is a requirement on the county state aid system that a portion of the revenues going to the counties via the County State Aid Highway Fund must be used within cities of a population under 5,000. And as the second piece, I'm not sure what extent MnDOT has worked towards outreach and providing information to those communities about availability of those funds. There's also less restriction on the use of local road, of general obligation bonds for local roads and local bridges, and that is another traditional funding source. And historically, I'm not sure how much has gone towards communities of those size.
Representative Hausman.
And just to follow up on that a little bit, because this is a piece that I don't understand well, because it seems to put that small city at the mercy of the county. They have no power to bring to bear to that decision that the county has, right?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, that's correct. It is a funding that's provided to the county, and it's not for use on the city streets of those small cities. It's for use on the county state aid system that flows through those cities. But that can potentially provide additional overall revenue that the city can then gain flexibility on. In other words, if a major road through a small city is a county state aid highway and is receiving some funds, and therefore being fixed up, it can sort of free up funds for the city to do work on its own streets in the rest of the city. The basic restriction is constitutional, and from what I understand, the rationale relates to the capacity of small cities as far as engineering staff and general capability of cities of that size to be able to undertake larger transportation projects.
Representative Beard.
That's where county engineers come into play, and every county's got one, and they're all best friends with every one of these small towns, so that's kind of how the system works.
And I would encourage people to talk to those engineers in your district.
No, your county engineer.
Yes, Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up on that. So are we per capita investing as much in our smaller communities as we are in our larger?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Metza, I don't have that information. I'll get back on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, that brings us, I think, to a close on the highway side. And so we'll move into the basic structure of transit finance. By way of general introduction, which I think has already been covered in previous hearings to a large part, transit operators, providers of transit, are at the local unit of government level. In the metropolitan area, it's the Metropolitan Council, along with some suburban providers, a couple other independent providers. And there's quite a wide variety of different types of transit providers and systems and arrangements throughout the rest of the state, at the city level, county level, multi-county, and so forth. The two basic state agencies involved in transit are the Minnesota Department of Transportation and the Metropolitan Council. Both work in the policy and planning worlds, both receive and administer and handle federal funds and provide assistance to transit operators. The general distinction is that the Metropolitan Council addresses transit in the Twin Cities metro area, does policy, planning, visioning, and is also a transit, major transit operator in the Twin Cities metro. And then MnDOT provides assistance throughout the rest of the state. There are several transit funding sources. There aren't as many acronyms and funds and formula allocations. So this is a little bit more of a list rather than a walkthrough of the intricacies. Federal aid, state sources, local effort. So it's a combination of all levels of government, and then fare box recovery are some of the components. On the state sources, there's a general fund appropriation made in the traditional, typical transportation budget. The motor vehicle lease sales tax was touched on earlier. A portion of revenues from that goes towards transit in greater Minnesota. Again, 4% of the motor vehicle sales tax is allocated, and then general obligation bond proceeds have historically gone towards transit facilities in some capital investment legislation in the past. In the metropolitan area, it's a sort of parallel, similar story with federal aid. Again, state sources, general fund, MVEST, GO bonding, and fare box recovery. Also in the metropolitan area, there is the transportation or transit sales tax. This is the CTIP revenue that was presented on, I believe, at the last hearing. This is a local option sales tax. So the authority to impose the sales tax is set by the state at a maximum rate of 0.25%, and the requirements governing how the funds are used and creation of the board is also set in state statute. There's also a property tax levy that is authority given by the state to the Met Council, and they've used that for bonding on for capital projects or capital portions of transit.
Vice Chair Bernardi has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question regarding and maybe this isn't a question to ask you, but the new proposal the governor came out with, that local sales option, that was going to be, that's, the counties don't get to vote on that, they're all included in it automatically, versus the CTIP counties could opt in or out. Could you if it's not the appropriate time to answer that question, that's something I'm interested in learning more about.
Well, and I'll have our nonpartisan staff, to the best of their ability, because I don't know to what extent they've been briefed on this, answer that, but just so for the members to know that we are going to have MnDOT and the Met Council come in to the committee, I think tentatively February 6th, I believe. We'll give you a little bit of time to prepare your questions, and they're going to go over very, very specifically the governor's proposal that was released yesterday, line by line, penny by penny, and so you'll have a chance to really dig into that. We wanted to give them enough time to prepare. We wanted to give the committee enough time to prepare. And so tentatively, pencil in February 6th, and those kinds of questions will be answered. But I don't know, are you – I think I have a sense of the answer to that, but I'm interested where you guys are thinking on that proposal.
Mr. Chair, the information that we've received so far is at a higher level. So,
yeah.
Can't.
And
I
thank you. And my understanding is that there's a lot in this budget that's open, and so the governance of where the sales tax would where it would end up and who would how it would be governed and who would be responsible for it is a fairly open question, I believe. At this point, I think it's seven counties, and I think there is some involvement with the Met Council, but. Obviously, there would have to be some involvement with CTIB and others. But, that's, again, as the governor said, this is a starting point, his entire budget, and it's up to the legislature to, come up with their own proposals, and I think that's what this committee's responsibility is as well. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if testifiers are aware of any studies combining Metro Transit and the suburban providers or the opt-outs. For efficiencies and that sort of thing. Are there any kind of studies that have been put forth to investigate the possibility of combining those two systems?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, I'm not aware of a study that has looked at that in any recent times. I think the most recent discussion of that gets towards that concept was the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report on metropolitan area transit governance that came out a year or two ago.
Right. Thank you. I was going to mention that as well. And for the members, if this is an area of interest of yours, it would really be great for you to take a look at that Legislative Auditor's report. We can also maybe provide a link and send it around to you. I applaud that Representative Beard took a lot of time and time well spent, I thought, in going over that. And there's some very important recommendations, and there is some discussion, Representative Earhart, about all of these different transit functions in the metropolitan area and governance issues and who does what and the history of that. So, the report is quite thorough in that. Representative Beard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And a comment to that before I get to my question for Mr. Burris, but I ran it up the flagpole, I took some rocks, and some people saluted, most people just threw rocks, so you're welcome to run that up the flagpole yourself and see if you can modify it and make it better. You're welcome to that. It is a fascinating discussion, though, one we should probably engage in. But to Mr. Burris, Mr. Chair, the quarter cent sales tax we have now that was authorized by the CTIB legislation here a few years ago. I know counties can opt in and opt out. There's a mechanism for that. But if they opt to levy under current law, if a county would opt to levy that, do they have to play in the CTIB structure, or can they levy it and collect it themselves for their own purposes?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I'll need to take another look through the enabling legislation, but I do have an initial read that they probably can't, that it probably the authority is centered around establishing a single joint powers board. Okay. To collectively, it's imposed by each county, but within the auspices of a board.
All right.
And Representative Hausman, just one sec. And on that, Representative Beard, my understanding is that even though Scott and Carver County did not opt in, mm-hmm. They do have some ex officio mm-hmm. membership or representation. Again, I'm not familiar enough with the CTIP governing process to know how, what that means in terms of votes or advisory functions, but there is at least some representation there, even though they're not levying the tax.
Sure.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While we're on the subject of sales taxes, on slide 30, I certainly am aware of local effort in greater Minnesota in some places where they have relied somewhat on the property tax, but you also list sales taxes, and I was a little confused by that. I mean, how does, in other words, they impose a local sales tax to pay transit? I didn't know that that happened anywhere in greater Minnesota.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I added that there, not actually based on knowledge of any specific sales tax that's currently imposed, but more on authority to impose a sales tax. When the 2008 legislation that established the CTIB and the metropolitan area sales tax was put into place, there was similar authority established for counties in greater Minnesota to impose a sales tax somewhat parallel for transportation purposes.
So the authority is there, but unless I'm wrong, I don't think any greater Minnesota county imposed that sales tax.
I don't believe, Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I don't believe so.
Representative Beard, did you?
I'm just thinking of a couple. I know the city of Mankato imposed one to rebuild their airport because they were going to exceed MnDOT's require maximum size. They used it for transportation purposes there. I'm looking at Representative Benson. Did Rochester use some for their new bus garage, which will be a transit-oriented thing to help pay for some of that? And I think the city of Duluth might have, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Mr. Chair, actually, they, in the extension of the sales tax that they just passed, a portion of that will go to roads and bridges, and I'm not mistaken, Duluth imposes a sales tax. Mm-hmm. And I thought we got a presentation from them about how they're using some of their proceeds for transit operations.
The transit hub. Yeah.
Representative Earhart?
Mr. Chairman, you're talking two different sales things. One is a countywide that was the 2008 affair, but you're maybe talking local option on by city here.
Mm-hmm. We are.
Which is different pots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Correct.
Okay.
Proceed, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, I think we were at this chart outlining just state funding for transit and the basic sources. So you can see the portions of MVEST, some general fund appropriations, and a portion of the sales tax on motor vehicle leases. I'll briefly touch on some of the other modes that are also under the, obviously, purview of transportation finance. Aeronautics is perhaps the biggest one from a funding and not complexity, but intricacy standpoint. There is a fund for airports, the State Airports Fund, that is the main funding stream for aeronautics, and that's functions of the Department of Transportation and their technical assistance and planning efforts and aid to the various airports throughout the state. There are three core revenue sources that is somewhat parallel to the revenue sources for highways. One is a fuel tax on aviation fuel, and that is at a rate that reduces in depending on the amount of fuel used. So the vast majority of the fuel consumed is by commercial airlines and is at the lowest rate. There's also a registration tax for all aircraft, somewhat parallel to motor vehicle registration. And then there's a property tax for commercial aircraft equipment. Some of the other modes, ports, freight and passenger rail and commercial motor vehicles, are also funded through transportation finance legislation and general fund appropriations. And there was we discussed general obligation bonds for both programs funding these types of modes as well as specific projects. The Department of Public Safety is funded through transportation committees in part. One of the areas of funding is for the State Patrol, and their basic job is to patrol the trunk highway system. So it's patrolling the state's system, and Trunk Highway Fund is the funding source for that. This relates back to the basic distinction between trunk highway funding going towards the trunk highway system and general fund dollars going towards more general purposes of the state. There is a general fund portion going to the state patrol, and that's for capital security. Another division that's funded by transportation legislation, transportation finance legislation, is driver and vehicle services. This is a division within the Department of Public Safety that handles driver licensing, special plates, license plates, motor vehicle transactions, titling, and the like. There are two specific accounts, both of which are in the special revenue fund, that all of the various fees imposed for these types of transactions, for a new driver's license or for tab renewals, they go into these accounts. And so the basic structure for DVS is fee-based. There have been a couple of mentions of 2008 changes, and I thought I'd take a couple of minutes to touch on what occurred. It was a major piece of legislation in the transportation finance world with a number of changes. On the funding source or funding revenue side of things, there was a motor fuel fuels tax increase that was phased in. The registration tax was modified, and a portion of the sales tax on motor vehicle leases were allocated out of allocated towards transportation purposes, resulting in a general fund reduction. And then the local option sales taxes that we discussed previously were authorized. Also in that legislation, there was a significant amount of trunk highway bonds authorized. And it was a bit unusual in that the authorization was spread across a number of years. It now runs after being subsequently amended after this legislation, it now runs through fiscal year 2016. Typically, trunk highway bonds and general obligation bonds are authorized most often the day following final enactment. This spaced the bonds out. The Trunk Highway Bridge Improvement Program was established in the 2008 legislation. This set criteria and requirements for MnDOT to evaluate and commence improvements on bridges on the trunk highway system. A large portion of the trunk highway bonds that were authorized are being used and have been used towards the bridge improvement program. The CASA funding allocation, which we had discussed previously, was changed in this 2008 legislation, as was allocation under the flexible highway account.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back in that debate, we were given a state map that had each transportation district highlighted, and then the total revenues, or overall revenues, I believe it was broken out per highway funding and transit funding. And then there was also a transportation district, I believe C is how it was allocated. So my question would be, is that referred to now as the flexible highway account? That'd be one question. The other one is, could we get an updated map such as that, to where it identifies all the transportation districts and then the allocations that go into each one of those?
I will definitely ask MnDOT for that, so thank you. And to Representative Hamill's question about, was there some allocation in our 2008 legislation for the flexible fund? I believe that was the question.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, and I believe it was referred to, we had each one of the transportation districts, and then there was one district, and I believe it was called Transportation District C. I remember it was a letter. It was C, I believe. Okay. And the way I understood it is that was an account that MnDOT could use and allocate those funds wherever they deemed fit.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with District C, and I don't think at the time I'd seen the allocation map, so I'm not sure who had put that out. But the flexible highway account allocation requirements were changed as part of the 2008 legislation. trunk highways were removed from as one of the funding sources. There was a portion that was set to go to local roads in the Twin Cities metro area. There were a couple other priorities, new priorities that were added in. So, Mr. Chair and members, to wrap up on the basic finance structure, there, I guess, a couple of takeaway points that I would like to emphasize.
Okay, just before you get into the conclusion, which is great, I saw Representative Howe had a question. And by the way, so Mr. Rudin is here, and I don't know, Representative Hamilton, if you wanted to talk with him or if you have any thoughts about, maybe we'll talk after the hearing about Area C and make sure that Representative Hamilton's question is answered. Okay, Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just got a simple question. It is back on slide 37. It just says in those key funding changes, it says the hold harmless provision. What does the hold harmless provision entail?
Mr. Chair, Representative Howe, when the registration tax change was put into place, a couple of the modifications were to eliminate caps that had been in place for the maximum amount of tax that could be imposed. The hold harmless provision established that the amount paid on in registration tax on a specific motor vehicle could not be you could not pay any more in a subsequent year as a result of the changes. So if you'd gotten under the paid your registration tax under the caps, and an equivalent vehicle that hadn't been registered yet were then being taxed under the new allocation, you wouldn't pay any more than what you'd already paid in the cap. So it was just preventing the tax from increasing on vehicles that had previously been registered in the state. But
thank you. Does that answer your question?
I eventually got there, I hope.
Okay, no, very good. So just to review, you're on slide, you're starting slide number
39, okay. Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair and members, this is on recap. There's a constitutional framework that heavily influences aspects of the finance structure, and then a number of statutes that lay out allocation formulas and flesh out the framework. There are three basic funding sources and three basic funds. And on the highway side, very little general fund dollars. You've also probably noticed there are quite a few acronyms. And so as a result of this basic structure, there's flexibility, but there are also a number of limitations. For instance, the dedication of funds. The constitutional limitation allocates funds just to transportation purposes. And there are also restrictions on the distribution of those funds. And that, Mr. Chair, brings us into a little bit more of a look on the budget and budget bills and committee accounts side of things.
Hi, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you. Didn't we impose a wheelage tax in the metro counties in 2008 of $5 per vehicle?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, yes, that's correct. There was a wheelage tax that...
I don't know if that raises that much money here, but it's also...
That would be a legitimate bullet point on those slides, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for raising that.
Only in the two counties, two metropolitan counties, Hennepin and Ramsey, I think. Correct?
Mr. Chair, I believe the authority was for the full metropolitan area, but not every county has imposed the wheelage tax. Okay.
And again, for more information on that, I see Senator Novak is here, and we'll probably be hearing from his organization later in the session about some of their ideas on that. And I understand from Representative Mason that she's almost certain that Dakota County is included in that. And I see Senator Novak is nodding. So, okay. Okay, proceed. Good. Thank you for the clarification, everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Burris. I'm Andrew Lee, House Fiscal Staff, and I'll be covering the last few slides and the few spreadsheets that are in your save folder. And I'd really recommend holding on to those as reference. Those are kind of the basic numbers for the committee account in terms of consolidated funds and general fund. I'll just run through really quickly. In terms of the funds that this committee has jurisdiction over, broken up between consolidated funds, or in this case, transportation funds. That's what Matt was talking about with highway funds, like gas tax, and then you know all the distribution amounts, county, state aid, trunk highway. That's the large 1.82 billion number, and that excludes federal aid. And then you'll see the $62 million number. This is, I should say, fiscal year 2012. That's the general fund money that this committee has jurisdiction over. And I would ask that you could go into your save folder and pull out a spreadsheet that looks like this. That I apologize for the small print, but it's Minnesota House Transportation Finance Committee account general fund only. And what this spreadsheet walks through is of that $62 million in 2012, kind of breaks it out between the different departments and agencies that this committee has jurisdiction over. And if I could wait, one note on that. This spreadsheet, unfortunately, is not quite compatible with the Senate's Transportation Finance Committee. In the Senate, they include all of the Department of Public Safety, so there might be some overlap and confusion when conference committee rolls around.
And Mr. Lee, I am not familiar enough with their entire budget, and we are going to have an overview hearing from DPS tomorrow, but do you know, and if it's fine if you don't, because this is a little out of left field, but do you know what percentage of the DPS budget we have jurisdiction over in this committee?
Mr. Chair,
ask them tomorrow. Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, in this spreadsheet, there's a few different basic columns. And for new members, I just wanted to explain that the columns that are shaded show the biennial totals, and the columns that aren't show the annual number for each fiscal year. And we're just closed out of fiscal year 2012 in July, and are currently in fiscal year 13. And when that biennial budget was enacted in 2011, they also enacted the base level for fiscal years 14 and 15. So that's shown there. Just yesterday, when the governor released his budget, I updated, and you'll see the column for general fund for transportation finance to the right, and then change items in the 14-15 biennium and the 16-17 biennium, and the difference between the base and the governor's recommendation.
Right.
So I stand for any questions on this sheet.
And I understand. Thank you. You know, in the past, we had those big binders, notebooks with the whole print that had sort of this. Apparently, we're not going to have that this year, but we'll see. I know we had that a couple of years ago. But get used to these charts, members, and I'm definitely getting some new glasses. But they are important. They are important, and, you know, definitely familiarize yourselves with them.
My question is, how's our optical coverage for our eyes?
that's, yeah.
So. Is he recommending less money?
Yeah, well, there's always, you can always
That's
use the copying machine to enlarge things. I'm sorry. Oh, Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm having trouble squinting here too, but is the governor is recommending less than we already have for transportation? And the base, what is the base here? What year?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, you'll see the base, the bottom line, line 17, Transportation Finance General Fund Account, that shows the totals for the general fund amount for this committee. And if you look on the base column, you'll see in fiscal year 14-15, $180 million. So that's the base amount. And then the governor's recommendation, the base amount for 14-15, is $154 million. So that's a reduction of about $25 million in the biennium.
Okay. Let's see. What is he cutting out in the transportation? Buses or planes or what here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart.
Repairs to the roads, transit.
The change comes from Metropolitan Council transit line. That's the general fund money that goes to the Metropolitan Council for bus operations, metro mobility, rail, and currently that is at $39 million a year. And in the base, it was scheduled to go up to $64 million. But in the governor's recommendation, it is at $41 million a year.
And Representative Earhart, so we're definitely, this is an example of the kind of question to put to the Met Council when they're here in a couple of weeks. But, you know, this is a little bit complicated. There was a reduction, and then in the tails, there was a bump. Representative Beard and I were all part of this. And then, so this is bringing it back to that level that it was in the previous biennium, am I correct, Representative Beard? And I think
sure,
that,
like it, yeah.
And it looks like that also, you know, there's going to be some of this sales tax potentially, I think, it's in the Met Council proposal. But again, this is all very sketchy, so none of us know a lot about it, but that's why we have a hearing scheduled for 2 weeks. But potentially some of the sales tax may be used for operations more than currently. So these are all questions to ask. It's a good one, Representative Earhart, but I think this does have to do with the negotiations that took place and some understandings that were reached between the legislature and the governor in our conversation about transportation 2 years ago.
And Mr. Chair and members,
about
Chair and members, if I could just highlight a few more items. On line 3, state roads, you'll see in the governor's recommendation that that goes up to $10 million a year and $20 million in a biennium. That is kind of moving around of a program that started last biennium of called Transportation Economic Development, and kind of the brief summary of that is it's giving money to MnDOT and Deed to administer for fixing an interchange that a business thinks is very important, and sometimes there's might be private money associated with that. So that's kind of an explanation of that increase. And then in the Department of Public Safety, the top line administration related services, that's a lot of kind of miscellaneous technical support, other items. I believe there's body armor piece to that, that's money that goes to local communities for police body armor. And then you'll see the line that's about $3 million in the base budget, 2.9 in fiscal year 29. That's line 12, State Patrol. That is the part of State Patrol that is capital security. Then that's general fund.
Great.
And moving on, I have two more spreadsheets. One, again, I apologize for the very small numbers, is an overview of consolidated funds for this committee. So that's the transportation taxes, the different distribution funds, and the transit assistance fund. And that is funded from the 40% of Invest and and a portion from lease vehicle sales taxes. And then that shows the distribution there. And I know this is a bit more of a complicated sheet with a lot of numbers, so if you have questions for me, I'd...
And so just members, I mean, were we to do really not much in this committee, which I hope we'll do more, but, you know, at its base, we would have to have a bill to authorize and enable the continuation of all of these, you know, for the coming biennium. That would be like the bare bones bill that this committee would have to pass. But obviously, there's additional ideas that members have. There are sometimes some policy creeps into this bill if it's related to money. But am I correct in that, Mr. Burris, that this would be kind of the skeletal plus whatever, you know, ongoing transit and general fund allocations? This would be kind of what the bill might look like in terms of money.
Mr. Chair, yes, you are correct that most of the spending authority for the agencies would require another budget for the next biennium. There are some funding sources where there are statutory appropriations, so it's, the appropriations are already made in and exist in current law. Motor vehicle sales taxes is the key example from for the transportation world. That those funds are statutorily appropriated to MnDOT and to the Metropolitan Council for transit operations. And so it highlights a point about these spreadsheets and particularly the budgetary sheets that will come out in the future, that all of transportation funding will not show up because the spreadsheets in a lot of cases will be centered or expressing what the appropriations are made in the transportation budget and not reflecting all transportation funds. So statutory appropriations in particular, but also funding from other sources that might be used in sort of crafting an overall budget, particularly CTIP is a prime example from the current biennium.
And so members, just especially for some of the new folks, I mean, the nice thing, if you will, about this particular finance committee is that we have probably the least amount of general fund money, perhaps, than any other finance committee. So we're dealing almost exclusively with dedicated funds. But, you know, the debate becomes, are these enough? If so, where would we get additional revenue for these dedicated funds? But we have a very minimal exposure to the general fund, and you know, a lot of that is in the Metro Transit piece, as we heard today. So, and Greater Minnesota Transit. So we have the TED program as well, but it's relatively small compared to other committees. And so that's why a lot of the bill is to enable these dedicated funds to continue to be collected and used and distributed as outlined today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The final sheet is an overview of the airports fund, and that just shows kind of it's much smaller numbers than the others, and it shows the basic revenues and expenditures, almost all going to the Department of Transportation, and that's administered in a few different ways with assistance to airports and grants for navigational aids.
And members, even though we don't have a formal aviation subcommittee, I do refer all things airport to Representative Beard. There's no one, I think, in the state legislature that I think knows as much and is as well versed in this and can answer your questions. But it sounds like you've got one of your own, Representative Beard.
Well, I just, Mr. Chair, if I just make a comment to the committee on the airport fund. Technically, folks, this is deposited in a special account in the general fund, which makes it susceptible to rating in times of budgetary stress.
There was a $15 million yes. raid at one point.
Well, yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for bringing that up. And so back in 2003, because this committee, prior to our getting here, had not authorized the expenditure of all the funds that were being collected by the Aeronautics Division, there was a fund balance of nearly $20 million, and $15 million of it was swept into the immediate cash flow to help solve the immediate cash flow crisis. That was done again a couple of years ago. There is a method for fixing that and paying that back without interest that we have been working on bipartisanly over the years. I'm happy to chat about you offline. But the point is, although this is a line item in the general fund, these are not general fund dollars as such. They are actually user fees, and the user fees are spent to maintain the infrastructure. No other general tax money goes into this, except perhaps at the county and city level, as they help maintain 136 airports around the state. So I just wanted to point that out, that these are user fees. Mr. Chairman, at some point there may be a bill advanced that talks about reconfiguring the structure of these three funds, because we have among the lowest gas tax in the nation on our aviation fuel at a nickel a gallon. It was set in 1949, has never been changed. But our registration fees, because of the way they were configured in 1949, are among the most onerous in the nation, to the point that companies are buying airplanes and parking them in Wisconsin or South Dakota to avoid our registration fees, which are extraordinarily high, among the highest in the nation. So we'll be talking about that more later, but I just wanted you to know that's a little bit of the airport fund, how it fits into the economy of the state.
So, members, I have three more questions, and we'll cap it at that, and then I have a couple quick announcements, and I think we'll be out of here very close to 11:30. Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought I heard you say we have the TED fund, but somehow I was thinking that was in the deed area.
Oh, I maybe need to be corrected on that, Mr. Burris. Is that from deed, or what jurisdiction do we have over that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Houseman, that has in the past few years been a joint program of DEED and MnDOT, as well as the Public Facilities Authority. So I think it would be fair to say that both committees have a degree of jurisdiction over that.
But ultimately, out of whose budget does this, which state agency does that? Representative Mahoney, do you want to shed light on that?
I don't know if I can shed a lot of light, but I think the best way to determine, or best way to answer that, is that to be determined later who has exact control or jurisdiction over that particular dollar figure. There's conversations have been going on over it.
Okay, that's helpful. And Representative Houseman, does that get to your question?
I thought I had seen it on his spreadsheet.
Okay. We have Representative Metza and then Representative Earhart, and then we'll end at that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out that we are also familiar in my district with rating of funds, and we'll cut a deal with Mr. Beard. We'll stay out of your funds if you stay out of ours. So.
Well said.
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah. Okay, and then Representative Earhart, last but not least.
Thank you. I was going to ask Representative Beard, if you buy Minnesota resident buys a car in Wisconsin and licenses it there and then tries to drive it around here, we get after him. Now, is there any similar things on people who buy planes and license them elsewhere and or something? Is that not illegal as well?
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, if the airplane is based in Minnesota, it must be registered in Minnesota. There is a limit, I think it's 60 days a year, so if somebody keeps their plane in Eau Claire and flies over here 61 days, the aeronautics will probably get after them. The problem is having people sit at airports and count those things up.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, airplanes that are based elsewhere and just fly through the state to pick up or drop off passengers, it doesn't apply to them.
Thank you.
Okay, well, first and foremost, thank you to our staff members, Mr. Burris, Mr. Lee. I've heard this presentation many times, but this was really well organized and just well done. And I just want the members to know that if you have additional questions and if you ever want to sit down with these folks, they're very accessible and available. And please don't hesitate to contact them. But, you know, my compliments on an extraordinarily well organized and informative overview. And I would really encourage people to put these in your save folder. Just a couple of announcements, just the roadmap moving ahead here for the next couple of weeks. We have a joint hearing again tomorrow, 10 a.m. This is with the Transportation Policy Committee, and this is going to be with the Department of Public Safety. We heard today our committee jurisdiction with them. I will not be here. Representative Earhart is going to be sharing that meeting, so I want everyone on their best behavior. Those of you who are on the policy committee saw the size of his gavel, if there are problems, and so I just wanted to let you know about that. And then next Thursday we'll have an overview of the TFAC. Wednesday is the TFAC hearing. This is going to be the governor over a year ago appointed a Transportation Finance Advisory Committee. Representative Beard sat on that. Representative Morrow was also on that committee from the House of Representatives. And so we're going to have an overview of that and the recommendations. And then the following Thursday, we will not be meeting during the day. I wanted to remind everybody of that. That's the evening that we're going to be heading over to the University of Minnesota, the Maroon and Gold Room at the McNamara Alumni Center, and that's for our special seminar with the Center for Transportation Studies. And I wanted to remind everybody to RSVP for that to Mr. Scheer, and we'll be doing that with on a bipartisan basis with the Senate Transportation and they call it the Transportation and Public Safety Finance Committee, and they do policy on that committee as well in the Senate. So that's on Thursday. So no meeting here on the 31st, but we'll be convening at 5 o'clock or after session. I don't anticipate a long session that day, but I don't know what's being discussed on the floor that day. But after session, we're at 5 o'clock, Thursday, January 31st. And then, again, the following week, we'll be digging a little deeper into the governor's budget, and hopefully that would be the following Wednesday, the 6th, and then the 7th, we're looking at having the Metropolitan Airports Commission in for their overview hearing, and I think we'll have covered all of the agencies at that point. So there is no further business or questions of the committee. Again, please RSVP to Mr. Scheer for next Thursday. And our meeting is adjourned.